Welcome to Highway Diary. I'm your host, Eric Hollerbach. With me, Elazar Guzman. How you doing, bud?
Hey, how's it going, man?
We're in your turf. We're in South Amboy at the Raise the Bar Lounge.
Yes.
This is your main stomping ground. Everyone knows you're here. You practically work here.
Yep.
I had an extra cup. You, like, busted. I'm like, do you work here?
Yeah.
I'll tell you, you know, we met. I met you with Franco at the same time. At the church...
The Court Tavern.
And I thought you guys were friendly guys, funny guys. And then I saw you host at Chamber 43 one night. It's like, look, this guy gets around. I see you here and there. You wrote something on Facebook, which is why I wanted to have you on my podcast.
Okay.
Can I read what you wrote on Facebook?
Sure.
August 18th. At 10:55 p.m.
10:55, okay.
After this week coming up, I'm closing shop for a while. Maybe for good. I'll only be producing my mic every Tuesday, but even that might end some time. I may have other people keep my shows going, moving forward, but I haven't decided yet. I love producing. It's been a struggle since I started because I've never had money. Even when I had a job, I put everything into them. And not only do I feel reward of creating a space for my art form to exist, but also when things went well, it felt amazing. Like I did something great, not only for me, but for everyone involved. I think it's time for me to focus solely on being the best comedian I can be and stop pretending like I'm a businessman. This week, the shows I put together, I'm going to put everything I am into them. And after that, I'm done. So don't miss these shows by me. They're literally the best lineups I've ever put together, and it will be worth every minute of your time. I hope to see you there, and I hope you've enjoyed yourself before my events. And your list some of your events. What happened to you last week? Did you kind of just you reached an impasse, or you got stressed out? It's a lot to produce shows, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I've been producing like at least 2 to 3 shows a week on average, and like they're all different types of things, like the mic, and I do stuff in New York City now, and but the thing is, like, the stuff I produce here, like, for example, I wanted to produce my birthday show at a theater, right? And I felt like I could do it, and I really believed in myself at the time, and so I set it up. I booked it at a theater, and along the way, I started losing money because I don't have a job. I produce shows and do comedy full time, and whatever money I get from that is what the money I have. And I ran into a financial situation where I lost a decent amount of money, and I realized I wasn't able to pay for the theater that I had booked.
Yeah.
And it became like this, the depressing thing that I kept thinking about all the time, because I didn't cancel it right away. Once I realized that I wasn't going to be able to make money, I didn't cancel it right away. I just kind of sat on it for a little bit, and I was just like, oh, I feel like I could do it. I feel like I still can do it. And right. Then, you know, a few weeks away from the show, you know, I gave in, and I was like, no, I can't make it happen. It's not going to work out. And plus, I have these 3 other shows that I have to produce for the festival. I just knew it would be the best decision to not do it at the theater, right? And that whole thing of me thinking about that and worrying about that, that shit made me super depressed, bro. Like, to the point where I fucking hated my life, dude. And I felt like a failure all the time just thinking about it, you know? And it's really just because I'm producing it. I'm putting it together. And, like, there's so much stress to worry about, you know, when it comes to all the different people involved, paying the people, you know, inviting everybody. And it's plus I produce so many things all the time. I'm always inviting people. Yeah. And it's really stressful, man. So before the week of the festival, somebody had called me about a problem they had with one of my shows. And I told them, I tried to explain to them the issue, and they were just really, really upset with me, right? And so I was like, okay, whatever. I just let them say what they had to say, and I just let it go. But then after that, I was like, you know what? I'm really fucking done with this shit. I really don't need it.
You're like all in and people are still complaining.
Yeah.
And you got your blood on the line.
Yeah, exactly. And another thing is that I'm starting to get more work in New York City thanks to some friends I made. And now it's like weekly where I'm out. I go to Yonkers every weekend and I have a few other spots that I bark for and I do spots at now. And that's taking up most of my time. And I really want to focus on New York. I want to eventually move there soon. So yeah. All the shit I'm doing, all the producing I'm doing on the side is just extra work I don't need to be taking on. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So yeah, that's the reasoning behind that. I thought you read that very well, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
It's a great reading job.
I have a master's degree. yeah, so it just seemed to me like, I've been through this. I produce shows in New Orleans and here and there. And it's a nightmare because I remember I produced a show at, what was it called? The Cafe Istanbul on St. Cloud Street in New Orleans. And the guy told me, oh, during Jazz Fest, you know, we might have problems. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay, well, your problems are not my problems. You told me I have this space at this time. Mm-hmm. You know, that's when I have this space at this time.
Yeah.
I'm going to fill the room for that space at that time. Mm-hmm. So she goes, yeah, Jazz Fest, it might be different, right? Mm-hmm. So then this jazz bitch is on fucking stage when I show up to the venue. Now it's 10 minutes over my time. Now it's 20 minutes over my time. So I don't know what to do with the people that are showing up for my show. Mm-hmm. There's like 40 people, 50 people, 60 people are showing up for my show. Mm-hmm. I'm funneling them in. Maybe I'm lying to you. Maybe there was only 40 people.
Yeah,
but I'm sending them in, you know, 40 people, right?
It's still good.
So I'm sending them into the room and I go, the jazz is going to be done in a minute. We're going to start our show maybe a little bit late. So just hang out, watch some jazz. Then after that, you know, we'll get the show that you paid for, you know? Mm-hmm. So then this jazz bitch is on stage, all right? Oh, wow. Now I'm killing it. Look, 40 people just showed up. Mm-hmm. Oh, 40. Look, I'm performing for 40 people. Mm-hmm. Those are my people. Those are your people.
Yeah.
She's like, now I'm like trying to get her off stage. And she's like, I'm going to management going, she's over. She's over now by 40 fucking minutes. And those 40 people are mine. I go, get her off stage. And he goes, do you want me to set you up in the hallway? I go, in the hallway? He's like, yeah, do your show in the hallway. I'm like, I'm not doing my show in the hallway. This piece of paper says that I go in right at this time and right now. Mm-hmm. You know, but New Orleans, they are on a different time. Like, they don't do standard time. Mm. You know?
What
they
do
don't
you
know
mean?
What time is.
Oh, because everybody's just fucked up all the time?
They don't know what time is.
Oh, okay.
Have you ever heard of colored people time, CPT?
Yeah.
They are on that, like, they're like on island time almost. You ever go to Jamaica? You're like,
no, I've never been there.
I have a, you know, try to have a friend in Jamaica and show up when you say you're gonna, okay? You're gonna be waiting 4 days for that fucking friend to show up. So it's like, no, but this is the time, right? It's 8 p.m. and now, so it was just a nightmare because I could see in the performer's eyes, oh, wow, see? I knew I just had to wait and then God would bestow upon me the audience that my voice deserves. I could see this happening in her fucking head. You would have to hit her on the head with a fucking shovel and knock her in the head with a fucking crowbar to get her off the stage when she starts to perform for people.
Yeah.
She didn't know that was my audience. She didn't give a fuck. She thought they were from God. Because everything happens
for a reason.
Magically, because I put my intentions out in the universe.
Yeah.
Dude, I was livid, dude. It was like, go in the hallway. I'm like, do you know everyone sitting in seats right now are my people and not one of her people? Like, I show up, there's no audience. I make an audience happen.
You left that in the living room.
Oh, thanks.
Anyway. So, yeah, I could see your frustration. And then I was like, all right, I got to worry about jokes. I got to worry about, I'm going to stop producing the show because it does make you friends to produce shows, but it also is so much stress that it kind of takes away from your art.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Is that where you're at?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. These motorcycles are ridiculous.
It doesn't make any sense to me. How, it's like, I want a mode of transportation That's 79 times louder than anything possible.
And it also gives you no protection whatsoever.
Yeah, let me sit on the motor that explodes constantly. It's like, because my childhood sucks. I hate them all. Just go die. Just, if every motorcyclist tomorrow went off a bridge, it would be a way better planet.
There's a whole lot of biker gangs.
Oh, my God.
What was your question again?
Just about the Facebook and my experience too producing.
Uh-huh.
It's like you're saying in this Facebook post, I just want to focus on jokes now. It's taken away from the actual craft.
Yeah.
The business side, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And another thing is that, like, I'm not like a real promoter or like a real like a businessman. Like I said, I don't know how to make money producing. Like now I know how to make money selling tickets. And I know how to do a spot and get paid for that. That's all I know how to do. But with the producing, I've just been kind of like, nobody taught me anything when I first started. So I kind of just learned along the way, whatever I do know now, you know? And it's not doing anything for me financially. And, you know, really all I'm doing is for the comics. Like, for the comics and also to give my own self, like, hosting experience. But besides that, you know, I don't really need it anymore. I don't need to produce fucking 4 shows a week, you know? Like, I could just be my own thing, do my own thing, you know?
Can I ask you some other questions?
Sure.
Did you go to college?
So I got accepted into my art school of my dreams, because I drew for most of my life. And it was a school called the Joe Kubert School of Cartoon and Graphic Art. I don't know if you ever heard of it.
Is that in Jersey?
It's in Dover, New Jersey. It's a very exclusive school. It's kind of like the Xavier's School of Gifted Kids, but it's like for like fucking artists.
Right, right, right.
And so only like 200 people get in every year. That's how exclusive it is. And so I always wanted to go to that school. Always fucking dreamed of going there. And then I got accepted, right? They came in like this fucking, this gold acceptance letter.
Well, it's an art school, so they're going to make sure that the postage they use is very well ornate. And
yeah, it was awesome. I was super, super happy about it.
Yeah.
And then I went there, and I was prepared to like draw my, because I had been working on my own comic book for most of my life. I had hundreds of stories. I've just been drawing it for years. And when I got there, I was hoping that they would teach me the things I didn't know how to really make it pop and bring it together. And when I got there, they were like, no, you got to draw Ninja Turtles for a semester. And I was like, what?
Because like, one of the professors was just like a Ninja Turtle guy, and they everyone who's like, I want to be a comic book artist, they're like, okay, this guy, one of our professors, is almost completely retarded, but he knows how to make Ninja Turtles, so you're going to study under him. Is that what happened?
It's something like that, because what the school is the school is like a thing for the major companies to hire people, to hire like fresh blood. So the whole appeal also of going to that school is that you get hired almost immediately afterwards, because like Disney, Marvel, DC, all those people, they come to visit you, look at your work, and pick you or not. And there's like a 99% chance you're getting picked for something, right? And so that's why they want you to be drawing these franchise type stuff
right. All
the time. They want you to get accustomed to it, to where it's like second nature, to where like, oh, you're going to be the new artist for Ninja Turtles. Well, great. I've been practicing for 9 years. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, so they're almost trying to make you build muscle memory for these fucking really popular characters sort of thing, you know?
So what happened? You get in there.
So I got in there. I didn't like it. And I kind of just gave up on the whole thing.
And did you make it through the semester?
No. I didn't make it through the semester. I ended up just quitting, because I have a very,
was it a 4-year program?
It was supposed to be three years.
Okay.
Yeah, and you didn't get a degree. You got like a certificate saying that you came from that school,
right?
Which is sort of like a degree, but yeah, it's whatever. But anyway, so I didn't complete it. I didn't go through with it, which pissed off my parents a little bit. And I kind of just threw away something that I had loved my entire life.
Yeah.
Drawing was everything to me.
Yeah.
And I kind of just threw it away because it kind of ruined the magic for me. You know what I mean? And I had this weird belief that I wasn't good at writing stories. I thought I couldn't write. Like, I wrote the story for my comic book, but it was, like, I wrote it in, like, pieces, and it wasn't, like, written like a book, right? And so I kind of always told myself, oh, I don't know how to write. And then I was just like, fuck it, I'm just going to try to write something, right? And I ended up meeting a woman who I liked her a lot, right? And she asked me what my passions were in life, right? And I didn't want to say drawing because I was done with that, right? So I told her, oh, I like to write stories. And she was like, oh, she's like, would you ever write me a story? And I said, sure, right? And so that was my first story that I wrote. And I finished it in like 3 days, right? And I gave it to her and she showed it to all her friends. And then we worked at the same place. And so everybody at the job wanted to read the story too. And it ended up becoming like this awesome thing that everybody loved. And they were like, we got to get a part two. We got to do that. Yeah, and I was just like, wow, really?
What job is rallying behind your comic book dream?
What happened?
What job is this workplace that this lady asked for your story?
So it was Burger King. I used to work at Burger King. Yeah.
Gotcha.
And
so all the Burger King employees are like, we're inspired by your writing and we're behind you, you know?
Yeah, and a lot of them were like really, really love the story. Like, and so it like created this belief in myself that I never had about writing. And then I started writing stories like a lot. In prose, like a novel, short story, shit like that. And I created my own publishing company. It was called GlobalDoorstep.net. That's the website. The company was Global Doorstep. And I bought a bunch of books. I put up my own books that I made. And I also found authors throughout the country that hadn't had anything published, but they had like good shit online. And I asked them for something original, and then I paid them for it. Mm-hmm. So like I ended up paying like $2,000 worth of money for like short stories and other books and stuff like that from other people. And I filled up this website, and there was only like maybe 4 or 5 stories on there. But I spent a lot of money building the website, buying the stories, and then I tried to promote it, tried to sell the books, and sold maybe 6 books. And I tried to keep it going for as long as possible. And eventually I realized this is not taking me anywhere. I'm not going anywhere with this. And it's kind of a long story. I feel like I'm just rambling.
No, but did you... It seems like you had a similar trajectory with comedy. It's like you get inspired. You go, this is everything. Let me go to school.
Mm-hmm.
Then you're like, this isn't what I thought it would be.
Mm-hmm.
Then you're like, oh, okay, well, the root cause of what I wanted to do was story. So let's get rid of the artistry. Let's just do the story, because that's the comic, the narrative. That's what I fell in love with, is these stories from comic books.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I want to recreate. Art school didn't work. Let me just go for story. So then you go on this trajectory of doing the story, and then you get further this time,
mm-hmm.
where you have a company and it looks legit and everything's real, and then you have books and everyone gets paid and you're doing everything right by everybody. So then you go, you know what? Let me give up this website because it's costing me too much money. Then you go and you start producing 4 shows a night. Then somehow we'll get into this, but you start doing comedy. And then comedy. Let me produce 4 shows. And then again, you snap. Then August 18th. After this week coming up, I'm closing up shop for a while. Maybe for good. But it's like every time you go on this circle,
mm-hmm.
the parabola is bigger, the trajectory is bigger,
mm-hmm.
and what is this a personality profile, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think
so
where is it going after this spiral out?
So at least with the comedy, right, I'm not stopping comedy as much as I'm doing it. When I stopped drawing, I literally stopped drawing for a long time.
Yeah.
When I stopped the books, I literally stopped writing books for a long time. But with the comedy, it's like I'm too deep into it. This is like, it's a part of me now, like 100%. And it's something that I've gotten real public results from. That the other things haven't been as public, hasn't been as reassuring to me.
Yeah.
Like, so I can draw something really, really nice, right? But there's a lot of people who can draw like that, right? And sure, the same thing with comedy. You know, I can make something really funny. There's somebody who can get just as big of his laugh, but they they can't do it the way I do it. You know what I mean? And if they can do it the way I do it, they're just copying. You know what I mean? It's for me, it's more genuine. This feels like it comes truly from me, and like the stories feel that way too. But this feels like it's already if I were to stop doing comedy altogether, it'd be like I'm gonna stop using one of my arms. You know
right,
what I mean?
Right.
At least with the stories and the drawing, that was always just the thing that I knew I was good at, but it wasn't like everything in my life, you know? I like to draw still. Like I draw these signs for RTB.
Good.
You know, these signs that they have out front. And I still write stories. I still love writing stories.
Do you think that the attention to detail in art, like when you're rubbing a pen over the same image over and over again to render something, mm-hmm. do you think that that gets your brain working in a different way so that you're a better comic too? Like if you completely stop drawing altogether, like maybe you lose something in your comedy, like the metadata of comedy for you is like a drawing practice?
Mm. I don't know if the drawing can be applied to it, because there's something I feel very separate between the two, almost like they're just two different worlds. With drawing, I can get very lost into it. Like if I sit down and really do it, I could do it for a long time. Time will pass and I won't even notice. But with comedy, I feel like I got to be on. With drawing, it's like I go inward.
It's like introverted versus extroverted.
Exactly. Yeah.
This is the part of myself that likes to sit here for 2 hours and look at the same thing. This is the part of myself that sees other people.
Yeah, exactly.
And here I have to be seen. Yeah, it's interesting. It is a mindfuck because I'm also like the kind of person where I like to go, man, I cannot wait to get to a level where I just show up, I do a show, I get paid, I leave, nobody bothers me, nobody wants nothing.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, can you imagine how great that would be? Like, no business, go in, do the show, leave, nobody, don't talk to nobody, don't ask me no questions.
Exactly.
That would be the greatest possible thing, because it's like, it's the best of both worlds. It's the extroverted in front of the audience,
mm-hmm.
let me get the check. Don't look at me now. Now I need to turn it off to recharge. It's like when you're promoting and producing shows too, it's like the business is all extroverted trying to get people to come. Mm-hmm. Then when you're on stage, you're trying to get people to laugh.
Mm-hmm.
Then you're taking photos with people. It's like there's nothing left for you.
Yeah.
It's like you're a rose. You're giving out all your petals just to get to the show. So that you're just a fucking stem and a fucking clitoris at yeah. the end of it. You got nothing left, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know if the clitoris is real. Do you think it's real? Have you ever seen one?
I've seen a clitoris before.
Oh, okay. All right, let me write this down real quick. All right, well, let's talk about something else. what's your job history been? You worked at Burger King.
So I worked at Burger King. I worked at... I worked as a 5-star catering chef, uh-huh. so I wore like a tuxedo and shit like that. That was actually a great job that I did not appreciate, because I got paid $15 an hour to be a waiter, and I got tipped. So I was making bank just going to work for 2 days a week. It was pretty crazy.
Yeah.
And it was for these like 12-hour weddings and shit like that. You know what I mean?
Right.
So
you're getting $15 an hour, and then you're getting another double salary for 2 days.
Yeah, and one thing I learned about doing European weddings is that Albanians fucking tip like nobody else, bro.
Yeah.
I'll get an Albanian a fucking whiskey for his drink or whatever. He'll throw me $50, right?
Wow.
$50, and then I'll get him another drink, another $50, bro.
What the fuck?
And I'm like, how are these people doing this? And then during their wedding,
they take
like stacks of cash while people are dancing, and they just fucking throw it in the air, bro.
What the
They just
fuck?
Fucking throw it in the air. Everybody's dancing on the cash.
Yeah,
bro.
Yeah. I don't want to say, now I left an Uber driver. I can tell you, and I don't want to, okay, I'm not going to say the race.
Yeah.
there's one race of people that I've been driving for 4 years. There is one race of people that I've never, never received a tip from. Mm-hmm. Indian people.
I'm
not going to say, I didn't say that, but that is actually factually accurate, that you can work for 4 years and okay.
Well, it, you know, I I've worked with Indian people for a long time.
Yeah, yeah.
Because when I wasn't doing
don't
the,
say that out loud.
When I worked with people for a long time.
Sure.
And after the waiter job, I got a job working in a kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
It was at this nursing home, right? So I was working in the kitchen of the nursing home, and we had an Indian kitchen. It was separate from our kitchen.
Right.
And
it was too stinky to have it together.
Oh, I got some stories about the Indian kitchen. But anyway, fucking, because we had a whole floor of all Indian people in our hospital, right? And so they didn't. It seems in their culture they don't have too many courtesy words or too many courtesy things.
I've noticed that.
And there's no really thank you or please or anything like that.
Right.
And which is fine. It's whatever. It's everybody's got their own cultures. But when we would ever interact with them in our kitchen, like so for example, let's say we had like a bunch of plates, right? We're about to take our plates to our floor or whatever to serve our people. Like one of the Indian ladies would come up and take half our plates and be like, mine. And just like, we'd be like, I would have gave it to you if you just asked me. You
right,
know what
right.
I mean? And it was little things like that. But, oh man, I love the Indian people though. They're so funny. They burned down their kitchen twice at my job, right? These little old Indian ladies burned down the kitchen twice. And then a third time, they were almost burning down the kitchen. But what happened was they took a big ass pot. And they filled it with super hot peppers. I don't know if you know Indian people.
Oh, yeah.
Crazy hot peppers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So maybe that's why they're not polite, because they're always in agony.
Yeah, their assholes burn like horribly.
So they don't have the language skills for thank yous and pleases, because they have like constant hemorrhoids that are bleeding and.
I would've done it, bro.
Mine. That's her assholes on fire.
Well, yeah. So they fill up this fucking pot.
This is the most racist episode I've ever had.
But they fill up this fucking pot with these super hot peppers, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the lady, she was the only one working that day, so her helper wasn't there, and so she went off and did something else. And the thing is, another thing a lot of people don't know is that Indian people rarely use oil or any kind of lubricant in their food, right?
Yeah.
So these fucking peppers were just sitting in this fucking thing, literally just burning, right? And they lit on fire, right?
Oh, okay.
And these hot peppers lit on fire, and this smoke was literally like tear gas.
Right, right.
And everybody in the kitchen's like, I can't breathe and shit. Yeah. Your eyes were burning, everything.
The Indian people come out, they're like, Mama's cooking. Smells like home. I'm home, Mama.
Oh man.
Your mom's been dead for fucking 40 years, you dirty bitch.
Oh man.
Let's take a break. Elazar, I had a religious experience today.
Mm-hmm.
In my neighborhood. I live in Montclair, New Jersey, and I these hot Montclair State University track athletes.
Okay.
They were running by my house, you know, and I got in my car and I ran out and I said, oh man, I saw enough to know these bitches are bad. They are hot as fuck.
Mm-hmm.
And I literally did the sign of the cross and I go, God, please have these girls run by me again.
Mm-hmm.
So I can really, I saw their booties, but it was like a glaze.
Yeah.
It was like just a grazing shot, mm-hmm. right? But I saw their, you know, their waist. They're all wearing bras, little athletic sports bras with their little perky little titties.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, what? You know, like I just missed it, like out my window, you know,
yeah.
with binoculars, you know? And then I get in my car later. And I'm like, oh, please, God, please let me see these girls again. I go to the railroad, and the railroad is going by to Montclair, you know, to New York City, you know, there's So they close the road right as I'm... so I get stuck behind this railroad. And from like an alleyway, all the bad bitches in their little sexy, perky little tit outfits come through. Uh-huh. And now they're waiting for the train with me. And I put on my sunglasses and I'm trying not to look, but I'm looking hard. And I just go, thank you, God. God is real. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, why are we all stuck behind the train? Yeah. Just so I can look at their booties, obviously.
Yeah.
And so now I'm like a believer. I think it changed my life. I'm going to go start going to church again.
That's good, man. I mean, everybody finds their faith some way, you know?
Yeah, because it's like, you ever have like a little piece of synchronicity that tells you that you're on the right path or that you feel like...
Hell yeah.
Can you remember any of those examples?
You
were asking for a sign from God.
You know, I used to be extremely religious. I don't know if you were aware of this. I used
like
to be
Catholic?
Jehovah's Witness.
Whoa.
I was raised Jehovah's Witness till I was about 16 or 17. And it's not that my parents didn't want me to keep going. It's that I chose not to do it anymore. So there's a little story about the reason why my name's Elazar, right? Elazar means God has helped. And so when I was born, I was supposed to die. The doctor told my mom that he's not breathing right, and it looks like he's going to die. We don't know what we could do. So they told my mom, you know, to pray to God, whatever you can do, and we'll try our best. And so they took me away, and my mom prayed to God, and she said, Jehovah, that's what they call him, if you give me my son, I promise I will give him to you. Now, in the Bible, there's certain people in the Bible, certain stories where parents did that. They said to God, look, God, if you give me my child, I will give him to you.
Right.
And so, and when they mean give him to you, that means essentially he will be a monk, or he will give his life, his soul to you.
Right.
And which I think was a little unfair that she was just, you know, giving it away without my permission.
Right. She was like, do you need a slave, God? Because you have infinite power, but, you know, you need someone else to tidy up around the place. So this fucking blue dork, instead of him dying of a heart murmur at birth.
Yeah, so I ended up surviving, obviously. And so she named me Elazar. And so from then on, I was... Also at the time, my mother was something called disfellowshipped, which means you're essentially banned from the religion, you're kicked out of your own family, you can't speak to anybody you knew or grew up with, you're pretty much just cut off from the world. And so, because she did that prayer to God or whatever, she felt like she needed to go back. So she focused on getting back, and when she got back in, when she got it back in, her whole focus was for me to be assimilated into the religion, and for me to grow up something called the Bethelite.
Right.
Now there's...
You have to fulfill the prophecy.
Sort of, yeah.
She didn't thank the doctor. Like when the doctor, like when you were back, you know, out of the respirator, she grabbed you and was like, mine. You know what I mean? Like super rude.
Yeah.
And she was like, thank you, God. Like, I know you did this. And the doctor's like, I went to school for 12 years. Get the fuck... That's mine. You know, that fucking rude Indian with your plates. All right, keep going.
It was something like that, but So what a Bethelite is, right? There's regular Jehovah's Witnesses. There's all different ranks, right? But your baseline is just Jehovah's Witness, right? And then the farthest, like the most master level,
Pope
is something like, sort of like the Pope, but not the Pope. It's the master level is sort of something called a Bethelite, and a Bethelite is somebody who is trained in the religion but also writes the religion. So they know the religion so well, it's almost like they know where God is going to go with it next.
Right.
And so they're the ones who are supposed to write it, and they're supposed to be the most knowledgeable, and they're supposed to be like almost like the librarians and the writers of the fucking religion, right? So so I was trained to know the Bible extremely well. You know, like 8-hour studies.
The Jehovah Bible, is it different?
I was trained to know everyone's Bible. Everyone's religion. And that's the thing about the Jehovah's Witnesses, is that that's a lot of what the training is convincing somebody that what they currently believe is not true. Mm. And then taking your own beliefs, finding the holes in their beliefs and then filling their holes with what will convince them that you're right.
Yeah, you're donkey shit.
Yeah, exactly. And because a lot of religions are...
What if someone's like, I'm not in a spirituality that you've studied. I have my own divine communication with the infinite.
Well then they're gonna go what's it called when you're having a crisis about
of consciousness?
No, a crisis about dying. Existential
crisis.
Yes. So everybody's kind of going through an existential. If you're alive, you're going through an existential crisis. But there's your conscious mind that's sort of like the curtain over that, right?
Right.
The existential crisis always exists, but it's behind the curtain, and it's this facade of like,
your subconscious.
I'm completely fine with everything. This all makes sense to me. Life is normal.
I'm gonna book this theater for my birthday. It's normal. It's no problem. In the back of my mind, I don't have enough money to pay for it.
Exactly. So Jehovah's
living in two worlds.
So in that situation. That situation, particularly a if it was work for them, they'd be like, like how you just said, where I put on this facade that I'm doing my birthday show at a theater, but really I don't have enough money.
Yeah.
So Jehovah's Witnesses would be like, do you have enough money for that? And so they know to go to the psychological parts of you they are really focusing on, and then try to relieve them with their beliefs.
Right.
Try to be like, look, there's a place where hope exists, and it's with us.
I feel like that's how it was when I lived at my dad's house. Maybe he's emotional manipulator. Yeah, but go on.
How
many people are in the council of Jehovah's Witnesses? Is it 12? Is it one per 50 states?
Like, you mean of the upper ranks?
Yeah. So like, there's a pyramid, you know.
Yeah.
There's someone who runs the shit.
So
below him, what is the structure of the top brass of the Jehovah's Witnesses look like?
So there's something called the governing body, right?
Okay.
And the governing body, they're like the
where
kings.
Are they? Where are they? What
they're,
city?
They're in Brooklyn. Brooklyn, New York.
Okay.
In a place called the Watchtower, which is also the name of our magazines.
Right.
So the governing body is, I believe, 6 or 7 individuals who have all risen to the ranks of becoming a governing body member. And the governing body, they're essentially the kings. They're the kings of the religion. And a strange thing about the religion, I don't want to get too deep into it, but I did a lot of research into the religion a few years ago, and I found out that it has strong Masonic roots,
of course,
from the Freemasons.
Oh, sure.
And then I did some research, and I watched videos of the governing body members give speeches, because there's videos of it online. If you zoom in on every one of their pinkies, they have a Masonic ring on every one of their pinkies.
Well, it's like the Mormons. It's the same thing. And if you go in Salt Lake City, the Mormon temple, all of their shit is Freemasonic. What blows my mind about the Mormons, particularly, is they just finished building a new Mormon temple in the Vatican. So they just... Imagine this. Joseph Smith was a cult leader. He started the Mormons. He was a Mason. He started the Mormons. I don't know much about Jehovah's Witnesses, but it sounds like a parallel story. L. Ron Hubbard as well. Studied with Aleister Crowley, one of the top Freemasons ever. They just finished building a Mormon temple. So Joseph Smith, when he was shystering people, he said, I have inside this top hat are the golden tablets of Jesus' final work.
Mm-hmm.
He's reading them. He puts his face in a top hat, and he's just dictating to other people what the real Bible is.
I thought there was some kind of crystal he was reading it through.
Maybe. I thought it was tablets on a hat.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like this kind of chicanery, but only he got to see look in the hat.
Mm-hmm.
So then people wrote it down, and he says, I'll come back tomorrow and read the same thing. So then he puts his face in, and they go, it's different today. And he goes, what a miracle. No, you're a shyster. No, what a miracle. The golden tablets are changing, giving me new information. And they go, we believe you. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So they write the Mormon Bible this way. And yesterday, or last year, they built a new billion-dollar, multi-billion-dollar temple in the Vatican yesterday, like last year. And it's like, I don't know how a con artist...
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, after L. Ron Hubbard died, how does Scientology still exist?
He had built something very similar to the Jehovah's Witnesses. What the Scientologists have that's very similar to Jehovah's Witnesses is that there's this thing of once you're in the group, you're in the group. If you leave, you're fucked.
Yeah, yeah.
If you leave, we take everything from you.
Yeah.
Right? And so, but the thing is, in the group, we'll give you everything.
Yeah.
In the group, yo, I will give you money. I'll give you food. I'll fucking live you, let you live in my house. Everything, bro. I'll fucking love you like no other friend will ever love you. Right? And so, and that's how they keep people trapped in those situations, because in a normal life situation, you don't have 50 friends that would fucking kill themselves for you.
Right, right.
You don't have that.
Yeah.
And that's what these organizations build for these people, is a sense of security. That.
Do you think the six elders all have like crazy blackmail material on each other? Do you think that they have to like kill a goat and do a satanic ceremony in order to, so it's like, we know who you really are. We know the lengths you'll really go. So you wanna rat on us? Okay, we'll destroy you.
So
do you think it's got to be like the silver or lead? We'll either pay you or kill you type of scenario with the six elders of the Jehovah's Witnesses?
Well, the elders are immensely powerful, immensely rich. I think either most of them or all of them are billionaires.
Billionaires.
Or at least like multi-millionaires. They're very close. And their whole thing is trying to look like the most purest person imaginable. Like, they are the pinnacle of what a Jehovah's Witness should be, right?
Right.
But the thing is that they are so high on the level is that it's almost looking at God, where you like, you know you can't be God, right? But there are some people who have these ranks that you must respect that they exist, right? And that's what a governing body member is that, like, so there's this one guy, he's one of the most powerful governing body members, and he talks like this. He does this very childish way of talking to you. And it's
yeah, he's like a snake charmer.
Exactly, dude. And Jehovah's Witnesses like low key make fun of him because they're like, why is he talking to us like he's a kid?
Right.
It's because he doesn't want nobody to know that he's fucking touching little boys or something, bro.
Right, right.
And the thing is, that's another thing about the Jehovah's Witnesses, is that they pretend like those things don't exist. They pretend like sexual deviancy doesn't exist. They pretend there's nobody fucking kids in this thing. We're not like the Catholics. Catholics, we're better than them. That's what they fucking think. But the thing is that Jehovah's Witnesses have the same fucking problem, bro.
Well, why did they just build a new temple in the Vatican? And, you know, the Vatican, you know, where the Catholics are, they got their HQ. It's almost like they put their HQ across the street going, we're watching you.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what you do.
Or it's almost like, you know how they say, you've heard the term clout or clout chasing?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's almost like the same thing. Like, they want that clout, so they're sticking around.
You know I wonder if, like, new Italians, you know, their Italian grandma, she's got osteoporosis, you know what I mean? She's making meatballs over the stove, you know what I mean? She's doing it right. And they're like, mama, we're Mormons now. And she's like, what the fuck is that? And they're like, no, mama, they built a new okay church. They have a different ideas, you know? And she's like, I've been making the same fucking meatballs for 300 years, you know what I mean? We're Mormons now. I want many wives. I want my dick sucked every night of the week by a different wife.
Yeah.
You know? It's weird to, like they've been Catholic forever. They're like old school Catholic, the Italians, you know? How are they gonna recruit new members in a city which is devoted to Catholicism? The Vatican, you know? It's its own state.
The Mormons have they've reached their own level of power where it's like, you know, they have politicians, they have kings, they have whatever the hell they have, you know? They got people doing shit on a high level.
Yeah, yeah.
The thing that I was always jealous about Mormons, I only found this out maybe like 2 years ago. So Jehovah's Witnesses, if you're a Jehovah's Witness, you're a Jehovah's Witness till death, bro. If you fuck up a minute before your death, you fucked up everything, bro. Right. You know what I mean? Because you're in it. You're in it, dude. Well, with the Mormons, I found out recently, if you become a Mormon, you only have to be a Mormon for like 3 years. Like an active Mormon, where you're like telling people about it and like wearing a suit all the time, going to the meetings. So like there's only like a certain, it's almost like, you know how in like Sweden or like those other European countries where like everybody has to be in the military for a certain amount of time, and then they don't have to be in the military anymore.
Right, you have a term limit.
Exactly, that's how the Mormonism is.
It's like you give your all for a few years.
Yeah.
And then after those few years are done, you're free.
Right.
You're good. But Jehovah's Witnesses is like, no, you are in this forever.
Right.
And it's also a very closed-minded religion, more than most. Like almost everything about music, almost everything about movies, almost everything about
culture.
We
can't have a birthday.
Can't have a birthday. And the reason for the birthdays is stupid. It's because there's a bunch of people in the Bible who died on their birthday or who had people killed on their birthday. So that's their reasoning for it.
At Westmore Central High School in Chester, New Jersey, where I was from, we had Shannon Rampton. Shannon Rampton, a Jehovah's Witness, the only one I knew. And we were on her birthday. We would always go, "It's your birthday! This is the greatest day!" She'd go, "Don't say that. I don't know what that means."
Yeah.
You want a happy birthday part? I don't know. No. She was just like so cripplingly like, I don't know. I didn't like have the words to describe it back then because I didn't really know about Scientology. I didn't know about cults. But now it's my favorite topic. But it's like there's a level of brainwashing that was over her that was like very different than every other kid.
And I'll tell you the secret sauce. I'll tell you the reason why behind all that shit is because there's a scripture in the Bible, in everyone's Bible, where Jesus says, if you follow me, then you don't follow the world. Because I am not a part of the world. Mm-hmm. And if I am not a part of the world and you follow me, then that means you are not a part of the world. Mm-hmm. Right? And so there's this separation between Jehovah's Witnesses and the world.
Right. So, everyone else was dating, you know, wearing miniskirts. Mm-hmm. She did none of that shit. Mm-hmm.
And so amongst the Jehovah's Witnesses, if you are amongst the Jehovah's Witnesses, you will be saved. And there were no
Stanley Braff.
If you're amongst the Jehovah's Witnesses, you will be saved. You're good. Everybody else is fucked. Everybody
get out of here, Danny Braff. Sorry. Piece of shit.
I'm hijacking the podcast.
Okay. Hey, what's up, bud?
Come to Comedy Ever.
Hey, what's up, man?
See you, man. I'll touch you up.
All right.
Where are you going to be in the city performing? You said.
Hey, we're doing a podcast. Just 5 minutes.
Yeah. Oh,
I didn't know you were.
No worries,
this.
Dude. You're good.
Yeah, the secret sauce of the Jehovah's Witness.
Okay,
you
yeah.
are not with, if you're of the world, you know about other people.
Yeah.
You can't walk in my shoes.
So the thing is that the world is doomed, forever doomed, in a horrific death that you can't even imagine how horrific this death will be. It is beyond hell. It will be the most painful, fiery death you could ever imagine. And the thing is, if you're a Jehovah's Witness, you will be spared from that, right? So if you even relate to these people at all, or to the worldly people, you know, normal people, then you will be doomed just as much as they are. And the thing is like, no matter what, we live in the real world, right?
Right.
Where like, if I tell you some bullshit, you're not gonna believe it. You're like, okay, that doesn't make sense. That's not true, right? But these people are trained from birth to believe that the angels and God will split the sky apart on a special day and murder everyone in front of you. Everyone will be murdered. And you cannot look into their eyes like they're a person. To you, they are the sinned. They are the fallen. They get what they deserve. And that's how you have to think.
So that's why Shannon Rampton wore frumpy jeans?
Probably. It's probably why I wear frumpy jeans.
You ain't getting this pussy. I'm a Mormon. I'm a Jehovah's Witness. I'm on a different level. I'm wearing overalls. I'm covering this pussy so good. Wow. I wonder if they like put a do they put a candle under your clitoris or your ball sack to be like, this is what hell is? Do you want this? Do you like this?
I'll tell you. I'll
Any
tell you
torture?
What they do.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what they do. So when you're about to get married to somebody in the religion, you think, as a young Jehovah's Witness, you're like, this is it. I'm going to fucking finally get my dick wet and all these things that everybody enjoys.
Oh, wow.
I finally have my own wife. That's what's up, right? And you do this whole courting process where it's monitored and people are watching you. People know what you're doing, all that shit like that. And then eventually you get to the point where you want to get married, right?
Right.
And then you find out what the rules are to being married. Right, you think it's freedom? No, it's worse. It's the exact opposite.
It's
right?
worse than marriage.
Yeah, it's worse than marriage. It makes marriage way worse. So what? So, for example, when you're married, there's only one sexual position that is pleasing to God, and that is missionary.
In the butt? Oh wow!
Missionary.
I guess wrong.
Only missionary. and things like anal and oral. Completely against
Not even doggy style?
Not even doggy style.
Spoons position. 69.
If there's a chance your dick is about to slip in, you're fucking up, you might die.
Wow.
Yeah. And I've had family members, who, there's some people who are truly, truly, every part of them is locked.
They're still in it.
They're locked away forever in the heart of Jehovah or where the fuck it is. So they will never change, never, because that's they literally were trained since birth, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But there are some people who aren't like that. And then eventually somebody who is like that marries somebody who isn't like that in the religion. And when they find out the rules and they find out how locked in they are, they leave.
Right, right.
And it creates a lot of fucking heartbreak. It creates a lot of
But you can't just lick my pussy a little bit from
the
back.
Nope.
So I'm just going to bend in doggy. You know, don't put it in. Just lick it from that position.
Their biggest fear is creating homosexuality.
What?
Even amongst women. So if you give a woman oral sex,
yeah.
Their fear is that your pleasing of her of the oral sex will make her want lesbian sex.
That's some really like layers of homophobia.
Yes. And
then, you know, the Masons, they butt fuck each other to be a 33rd degree.
Really?
You want to be a 33rd degree of the Scottish Rite? Someone's going to hold you down and fuck you in the butt.
Wow.
On a checkerboard. The black and white checkerboard.
Jesus Christ, dude.
Do you know that Da Vinci painting where it's like this and like this?
Yes.
That's not one guy. That's a guy behind a guy.
Fucking the guy on top?
Uh-huh.
What?
Look at it again. Look at the Da Vinci picture of the man. One guy's arms are like this. I thought it was just like about the, what you know, the range of motion.
Yes, that's what I thought it was.
No,
I thought
no,
it
no.
Was showing
so
movement.
Then I looked at it again. It's not multiple arms. It's just
stacks.
Two pairs. Meaning it's one dude on one dude.
What?
Look at this right now. I am not lying.
All right, I'm looking up right now.
And this is Da Vinci, the Da Vinci Code, that's masonry. They're coding their true agenda into popular culture, but the muggles of the world don't know what they're looking at.
Mm.
This is the religion.
So type
in Da Vinci.
Is it Adam, right?
Well, that's more the statue.
There you go.
Yes. Two dudes.
That is two dudes.
Two dudes.
Holy shit.
So if you there's an action part down there, where it's also clearer too. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Yeah, there you go. And look at his legs. The guy behind is getting leverage.
And he's totally smashing that, bro.
Yeah, dude.
Right?
That's part of the Da Vinci Code they left out.
What the fuck, dude?
Because they don't want you to know what they're doing in the Masonic.
What the fuck?
Stop fucking kids, Masons, you
fuck,
pieces of garbage.
Dude, what?
Okay, can I tell you this? Epstein, his island had a Masonic temple.
Yeah?
Epstein's Masonic temple, also, the pedo island that Jeffrey Epstein was operating on,
uh-huh.
had underground tunnels, which went to Lord knows where. Dulce, New Mexico, to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base.
What?
Who knows where these underground tunnels of Jeffrey Epstein's pedo island led to? That's the Masonic temple on Jeffrey Epstein's island.
Holy shit, dude.
It goes so deep.
Wow.
Do you want to know why they killed him? Oh, wait, no, he had suicide, right? No, do you want to know why they killed him? Because he would have brought down sovereign countries, homie. If he testifies in a New York City Supreme Courtroom, Jeffrey Epstein, do you know the diplomats, the presidents that he's bringing down? He's bringing down this country. Bah. Oh, and then this so-and-so-and-so-and-so. That country's gone. Oh, and so-and-so-and-so-and-so. That country's gone. Oh, and the British royal family. That country's different. Oh, and this. They killed that motherfucker in jail. Obviously.
Obviously. That's the only... It's only, like, I was listening to a Joe Rogan podcast, and he was saying that's the only... that's the only death... The only conspiracy that he's like, yeah, that they definitely killed that guy.
Yeah, they definitely
killed... And it seems that way with everybody. I actually didn't know all this information. To me, it was just like, oh, he's a billionaire. Probably other billionaires killed him. Probably. That's just what probably happened. Because if you're a billionaire, why are you even killing yourself, dude? You could probably get out of this. You know what I mean?
L. Ron Hubbard did all the Epstein stuff. He, when the FBI was after L. Ron Hubbard for tax evasion, he took to the seas. He got all of his members on a boat and took them out. Okay, he had a harem of like 14-year-old girls, 13-year-old girls that outranked the members that have been in his posse forever. He's like, no, no, no. All this tight pussy that I outranked you.
Yeah.
Facts.
Wow, that's crazy.
Who did L. Ron Hubbard study with? Aleister Crowley. That's what he was all about. Young girls. Do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law. Do whatever you want is the only rule I have. This is what these people are about.
You know what I wonder is what is this deep, dark, underlying fascination with all of this?
I think it's stealing youth. Eternal life.
Hi, who are you?
What's your name?
Rosanna.
Nice to meet you.
You're Guzman, right?
Yes,
how do you say your first name?
Elazar.
Elazar.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. I saw your post. What do I
sign up? Just
soon.
Yeah. We're doing a little podcast. Well, I'm going to close off in just a moment. Plug some dates, LSR.
So I'm going to be at Yonkers Comedy Club every weekend, Friday and Saturday, 8 o'clock and 10 p.m. For as long as I know. But I wanted to finish with like I was saying.
Oh, yeah. It's the stealing of youth, I believe, is the religion of eternal life.
Is the religion of eternal life. Dude, it's crazy you say it like that, because Jehovah's Witnesses, their whole thing is eternal life. That's it. It's like focusing on eternal life and getting eternal life somehow.
Because they don't want to die. Because they're going to fight the mortar and brimstone that they prophesized.
Yes.
So they want to avoid that.
Yes.
So they want to, you know, this is also where, like, human cloning, it gets into, like, dark territories, because, like, why, you know, all the guys on Silicon Valley want to upload their consciousness to a hard drive.
Yeah.
And then be on a chip that goes into other bodies and stuff like this. This is a way of avoiding the birth process, the natural birth process, where maybe you have to go to get judged by a divine creator before you're born into a new baby, and they're like, I've done too much weird shit.
Yeah.
So I want to avoid that.
They're avoiding Judgment Day. Okay.
That's why Aleister Crowley was into this shit. Oh, you'll know his daughter. His daughter was a little known person called Barbara Bush. Aleister Crowley's daughter is Barbara Bush.
Really?
100%.
What?
Look at Aleister Crowley. Look at Barbara Bush. It's the same, basically, genetics. But anyway, that's how deep this shit goes, where it's like, oh, wait a minute, George H.W. Bush, he killed Kennedy, and he married Crowley's daughter? That's interesting, you know what I mean? But anyway, I could talk about conspiracies forever, but you got to host this show here.
Yeah, I got to host
this
show.
People are asking you. This is Raise the Bar, the paid spot, the open mic. You're going to be at Yonkers Comedy Club Friday, Saturday
for as long as I know of. And then also Skinny Bar in Manhattan on every Tuesday. That's why this is the last Tuesday of the paid spot open mic, because I'm going to be working in Manhattan that day, every Tuesday. Skinny Bar at 8 p.m. And also,
Danny Braff wants us to plug.
He's gonna be on
The Verve.
Also, I will be on at The Verve in Somerville, September 20th, opening for Aaron Burke.
Oh, okay.
And,
does Danny Braff run that show or no?
Yes, I believe his full name is Dannington Braff.
I prefer Daniel Braff Senior, Junior, the Second.
How many vaccines have you missed? Zero. Piece of garbage. You fucking autistic piece of shit. All right. That's been another episode of Highway Motherfucking Diary. This is episode 227 with Elazar Guzman.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
All right, bud.
Have a good one.